Kevin Clark, we're headed into Championship Sunday in the NFL. The Baltimore Ravens host the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Detroit Lions head to Santa Clara to face the 49ers. Depending on who ends up going, there could be very different outfit choices for you in Vegas. Up front, are you already packed to get to the desert?
I wear the same thing regardless of weather, Quentin. You know this from around the horn. I just wear a suit and tie wherever I am. That doesn't mean that could be Las Vegas. That could be Miami. Much to my detriment, I did do that in Miami. It was very hot. I regretted it, but I will never abandon the tie.
When it comes to this Sunday of football, though, the history, the stakes, what part of the championship games weekend do you enjoy the most every year?
The clash of the teams we know to be the best. I think that it's become a cliche, but I remember talking to a GM years ago, talking about the Final Four teams, and he said that every year he runs a report on the trends of the Final Four because this is where you want to be. What happens on Sunday? Maybe it's one fumble. Maybe it's one penalty that ruins your game. But we know that if you get here, you're the elite of the elite. And I think that teams understand that this is the accomplishment. There's a reason that with Brady and Belichick, this was the floor, the AFC title game. And then if they played well, they'd go to the Super Bowl. Same thing with Mahomes now. This is the floor, the AFC title game. They get there every single year, and then they go against another elite team. And then you get to see best on best. I think it's no other sport delivers this kind of drama that where you just know in one afternoon you're going to see the four best teams in the sport. 50 million people are going to watch, in some cases more. We just remember Brady versus Manning and those epic championship games, stuff like that. This is football in its purest form.
It's Championship Sunday in the NFL, and the question is, what are we going to see? Over in Baltimore, we've got the Ravens at home in the AFC Championship game for the first time in franchise history, with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson meeting in the playoffs for the first time ever. And out west, the 49ers have to be feeling all the pressure as they host the Lions team coming into town, playing with house money and all of Detroit Rock City behind them. History, legacy, it's all on the line this weekend where the losers go home and the winners head to Las Vegas for Super Bowl 58. So today, Kevin Clark, host of This Is Football, explains what we should expect as the NFL season draws closer to its finale. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Thursday, January 25th. This is ESPN Daily. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Before we analyze the X's and O's in this first postseason matchup between Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, I do want to ask you something about the narrative surrounding these two black quarterbacks. We've already heard that Lamar isn't quarterbacky enough for some people, but nobody says those things about Mahomes. Is there really that big of a difference in their approach to playing the position, or what do you think goes on there?
Well, okay, so first of all, Lamar Jackson's passing this year, and every year, by the way, has been legitimately unbelievable. Most touchdowns without an interception for intermediate passes, that's 10 to 20 yards, especially over the middle of the field, but most intermediate touchdowns without an interception, Lamar Jackson broke the record this year, according to Next Gen Stats, with 11. Guess whose record he broke? Lamar Jackson's in 2019 when he had 10. Tom Brady had 10 in 2016 as well. Aaron Rodgers had 8 in 2021. He is what you want out of a quarterback. The difference between Lamar and Mahomes is Lamar is significantly faster than any player playing quarterback we've ever seen. Both of them understand pocket movement in an almost like eerily prescient way. Kyle Long was on my show 2 weeks ago, and he talked about how Mahomes is almost like a great jujitsu fighter where he knows where he'll get beat along the offensive line or within the play, and he'll use that against a defense. And you almost feel the same way with Lamar. I remember talking to a couple people who were around him, like offensive linemen, tight ends and stuff. And they said that the one thing Lamar is amazing at is using the defense's body movements against him. It was actually compared a little bit to James Harden in the open court. And what I mean by that is it's not acceleration as much as deceleration, knowing where to stop. You know, we hear the phrase stopping on a dime. Lamar Jackson can do that. And so both of them understand how to move behind the line of scrimmage, and then both of them know how to pass it as well as anybody. I think Mahomes has probably shown a little bit more accuracy. He's shown a little bit more chemistry with his receivers down the field. Lamar's had lulls as far as deep passing in his career. That hasn't been the case necessarily this year. But they are both, I mean, two of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen in the history of the game. This is the first time that two former MVPs, or you know, current MVP in Lamar's case, has been given it. The two MVP quarterbacks, both under the age of 30, it'll be the first playoff matchup ever between those types of players. So this is history, and I don't think that we should take this for granted.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to me how they are so similar in styles, but people seem to look at them as if they're two completely different players, mm-hmm. when in reality, they're both just tremendous. So yep. That's really all there is to that. There is an odd dynamic to this game, though, because it's unclear who to cast as the underdog, or the favorite, for that matter. Baltimore has been the better team all season, no doubt, but the Chiefs are in dynasty mode at this point, and they had one of their better games of the season last week. Who do you think has the edge on Sunday?
I didn't even recognize that Chiefs team last weekend. And that's the problem, is like, it's almost like Mahomes is in his LeBron James, Michael Jordan mode, where nothing we see in January with LeBron has anything to do with what happens in May, you know?
Yeah.
And you think about Mahomes, and we spent so much time saying, oh, he has MVS. He had Kadarius Toney for long stretches as his number one option. Travis Kelce clearly wasn't healthy in a lot of spots. He was banged up. He was a little bit slow during the regular season. And then all it took was Kelce getting on the same page as him, maybe being a little more rested. That was important, obviously. They now have 1,400 yards in career playoff games, and I think more touchdowns than any other duo in history, receiving-wise. And then MVS caught the passes. And the difference between Josh Allen and Mahomes on Sunday was that Josh Allen had his receivers drop three deep passes, two by Sherfield, one by Diggs, the Diggs one being the most significant. And Mahomes completed three deep passes, one of those being to MVS. So you're seeing Mahomes understand how to do just enough. And so I'm going to lean Chiefs because of that, because they're the best problem solvers I've seen in the last few years in football. And I'm going to tell you something, the Ravens defense and obviously Lamar Jackson, that's a lot to solve, but I cannot go against them.
The Chiefs defense, though, probably had more to do with their success this year than at any other times during the Mahomes era. Meanwhile, by some metrics, the Ravens defense was the best in the league. We know they both need to get stops, but whose success is riding more on their respective defense, you think?
It's a Herculean task for both of them, because it's a different type of thing. Todd Monken had said earlier this year that Lamar playing quarterback, it's almost like the defense has to stop two separate plays because of the way he can extend the play. Now, for me, the biggest thing last week is the adjustment that they made in Baltimore was a lot of quick throws in the second half. I think that's where Lamar is at his most dangerous, when it's a combination of quick throws, get the ball out, beat the blitz, and then either designed runs or those big home run plays. I think him standing back there and patting the ball and waiting for something to open up, which he's been very good at throughout his career, if you're going to force Lamar to do anything, it would be something like that. They're going to probably try to blitz him, even though he torched the blitz last weekend. I think stopping Lamar Jackson is a wider problem, let's say, than Mahomes. The Mahomes thing, it's a complete nightmare. And he runs, Tirico was on my show, he runs in circles, not in straight lines. Like, the way he's just fast enough is incredible. It's hard for me to say who's harder to stop. The only thing I can say is Lamar Jackson can make linebackers look like high schoolers. And that, to me, is unlike anything we've ever seen in the sport. And so if you're saying, who would you rather defend? I don't want to defend either of these guys, but I guess I'd rather defend Mahomes, even though I'm picking Mahomes to win this game.
Besides Andy Reid, who is the most important chief in this game not named Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, my gosh. Chris Jones. Everybody talked about the last drive and the Shakir pass, where if Josh Allen hits Shakir in the end zone, it's a touchdown. Well, that wasn't Josh Allen not putting enough air under the ball, right? That wasn't him just being out to lunch on the most important drive of his career. That was pressure. And that was Deion Dawkins being in his lap. And Chris Jones is unstoppable when he's blocked. What's funny about this game, Clinton, is that there are so many guys who at their best cannot be stopped. There's a reason like the Ravens are so good against good teams. It's because when Lamar Jackson plays his game, he's unstoppable. When Mahomes plays his game, he's unstoppable. When Chris Jones plays his game, he's unstoppable. He can get to the quarterback quicker than any big man we've seen in a long, long time. He can wreck an offensive line. And so obviously Kelsey's in the mix, because if it's just Kelsey and Mahomes, that's enough to win you a game. So he's in the mix there. But if you're circling somebody and say, if this guy is a dominant game, the Chiefs win, who's not Mahomes, it's Chris Jones.
What about on the Ravens side? Who do you think really has to show up besides Lamar Jackson for Baltimore to advance?
Zay Flowers. The defense, Mike McDonald is one of the best defensive coordinators in football, if not the best. He's going to be a head coach very, very soon, if not like next week. The way they're able to disguise things post-snap is really incredible. I'm not circling necessarily any individual talent on the defense, because I think it's a collective effort. Zay Flowers and that receiving core, it speaks to what they've been able to do with Lamar Jackson. And I think that that's surrounding him. I mean, like, I know this is not a crazy thing to say, but like, Ravens threw out Willie Snead and were like, here, Lamar, like, be generational. And it was hard to do. And now they have Zay Flowers. Now they have Odell Beckham Jr., who is a little quieter, but still pretty important. I think we're seeing more options for Lamar Jackson, to where it's not just him. It starts with Lamar, but it ends with a bunch of guys in the supporting cast. Ronnie Stanley is another guy I'm going to throw out here. Ronnie Stanley's back. I don't know if you guys have followed this, but basically Ronnie Stanley was really struggling all year. He wasn't the same from an injury a couple of years ago. He had his best game basically in the last few years over the weekend. And so that was truly the weak link and on that offense, and it doesn't seem to exist anymore, which is absolutely massive.
We love offensive linemen with two first names. But getting back to Andy Reid, though, he's looking to get to the Super Bowl for the fifth time in his career. Mm-hmm. John Harbaugh is trying to make his second appearance with the Superb Owl, as they like to call it. How do they match up? What do you think this game means for their legacies?
Well, the one thing I didn't anticipate is that Andy Reid, if he keeps winning Super Bowls, why can't he be the GOAT again? Like, why can't he be the GOAT? And, like, that's the funny thing to me is, like, obviously, Belichick and that sustained run of 20 years, you're looking at a guy in his 11th conference championship game. You're looking at a guy who doesn't have a bad season and hasn't had a bad season since he was in Philadelphia, essentially, who understands the quarterback position and can generate actual talent at the hardest position to generate talent in the history of sports. With Harbaugh, it's a little bit different. He's not in the GOAT conversation, obviously, but this is a guy who has done, starting 5 years ago, when Lamar Jackson was drafted, he has done one of the best overhauls. Because remember, he was in the hot seat, legitimately on the hot seat 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And right after either 2018 or maybe he was in during the MVP season, where Albert Breer said, you know, the Patriots loved Lamar Jackson, but they knew they'd have to overhaul everything. That's true. Like the way your offensive linemen run, the type of outside blockers you have, et cetera, et cetera. The playbook, obviously. And you know what John Harbaugh said? Okay, we'll overhaul everything. We're good. We're not going to try to put a square peg in a round hole. And that's what they did for a handful of years. And obviously, Todd Monken has expanded that. But I think that Harbaugh's role in this and the Ravens' role in this in empowering Lamar Jackson to be this kind of quarterback, I think is something we shouldn't overlook. Let the franchise-changing quarterback change the franchise. And I think John Harbaugh has done an amazing job at that.
One of the interesting things about the Ravens is that people sort of remember them as the team that walked out of Cleveland, walked straight into Baltimore, and had a ton of success. But this is actually the first championship game Baltimore's hosted since the Colts hosted the Raiders in 1971. That was the first year of the merger between the NFL and the AFL. So this is a franchise that's never done this. Do you think there's any extra pressure on them to get it done at home, Kevin?
I think that both, I mean, Detroit is the same way, even though obviously they're on the road. I think that those are towns that can have football parties. You know, like I disgraced former coach Les Miles once called West Virginia a football party. And I think about that all the time, where it's like It's going to be an incredible atmosphere on Sunday. Incredible. I kind of wish it was a late game a little bit, just in the sense that, like, just you have the day to build it and go into the night. And the good news is, Clinton, is that at this time in the Northeast, everything gets dark at 4 p.m. So we'll be in darkness when they end the game. I don't think there's extra pressure. I think that there's going to be a release if they get over the hump with Lamar Jackson and they get to stop hearing about this BS and get to usher in. I mean, I think everything changes when you get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. You finally get to stop being on the defensive. You get to implement the things you want to implement. We might see a more open Lamar Jackson, something like that, where, I mean, obviously he's a great person, and I've interviewed him, and he's as good as it gets. But a different level of his personality we might see a little bit more, in the same way we've seen Mahomes. I don't know what would change, but I do know that seeing a dominant Ravens team actually win the Super Bowl would be very, very good for the sport.
What's going to win this football game for either of these teams, respectively?
I have the worst answer of all time. I'm sorry. If you've listened to me for the last 20 minutes and enjoyed my analysis, you're about to turn off. An edge here or there that we don't even know. A fumble. A weather pattern that changes the game. Something like that. These teams are razor thin close to each other. Razor thin. If I had to guess, it would be end of game execution. And that's something that's really hard to put your finger on it. I think it's the only thing I think matters with experience is that there's a minute and 10 on the clock. And for the first time in your life, you might, if you're a Raven, you might be running a play and saying, I've never been in a situation this big before. No one in Kansas City says that sort of thing. How do you do it? How do you get the play call? Who's panicking? Who are you? You know, it's almost like the right stuff, right? With the space program, the tumble thing, right? Like, whose hands are going to start to shake? That matters to me in the AFC Championship game. And I have no idea what that looks like. And by the way, when I say that, I might mean like a quality control coach who drops the playbook, you know, like that kind of stuff. Who on what sideline starts to freak out a little bit? That's the interesting thing to me. End of game execution is a skill. And I've seen in this type of game that's going to come down to the wire, I've seen it from the Chiefs. And that's why I'm picking them.
Coming up, we'll head to the Bay Area for the NFC Championship game. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. On the other side of the bracket, we have the 49ers hosting the Lions at Levi's Stadium on Sunday, and let's get right into it with San Francisco. They've been the best team in the NFC pretty much all season, but haven't looked as dominant since Baltimore embarrassed them on national TV on Christmas. What's changed with this team over the last month or so, Casey?
Confidence, maybe a little bit, in Brock Purdy, and I think that Brock Purdy is a very confident player, and I think he has an ability to bounce back. But when you get run over like that, you can't help but doubt yourself a little bit. And you might have to say, okay, maybe I'm not the quarterback I thought I was for those 2 months. It's a week-to-week league, and I know that sounds like the biggest cliche in the world, and I always say, you know, the old phrase is momentum is next day's starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. Momentum to me is offensive and defensive lines in the NFL, and are you going to get genuine pass rush on a guy? Because that changes how you play the sport. For me, Brock Purdy is a normal quarterback who is not capable of miracles. If you didn't know that coming into that Baltimore game, I can't help you. If you wanted to overrate Brock Purdy, that's fine. What has happened to him? I think they're just playing better teams, and this is what happens. Possibly that's a little bit of Kyle Shanahan over-relying on the system and going to guys who are replacements in the same way he'd go to guys as starters because he believes in the system so much. But I think overall, they're still a really solid team. They have one of the best rosters in the sport, and they have one of the best quarterback coaches we've ever seen in Kyle Shanahan. Quarterback-head coaches. Obviously, he's not the quarterback coach. And by the way, like, they're still winning against really good teams. The Packers are an awesome team. The second half Packers were one of the hottest teams, most efficient teams in football, and they beat them.
You just said, though, we don't have to take Purdy for more than he is, but at the end of that game, Brock Purdy looked good controlling that team, getting down the field. I'm not sure why we're so caught up on the discourse of Purdy not being as good as everybody else, so to speak, in terms of elite QBs. He can command a game and win a game in the playoffs. How much does that really matter, though, and what do you think of this discussion about whether or not he's at the top for the Niners because it doesn't look like everybody else who everybody assumes is good?
Yeah, so part of it is you see the stats and you say, is this real? And I think that that's the conversation where you say the stats are MVP. Like, Clinton, we had MVP debates about Brock Purdy. That's the problem with the discourse, is it got too much too quickly. And I would also put C.J. Stroud in that bucket where we didn't let him be a normal rookie quarterback, and he wasn't a normal rookie quarterback because he was being bandied about as an MVP candidate in October, which was extremely genuine. But once it happens, I mean, I think it's going to be like next year, the Texans will be bandied about as a Super Bowl pick, even if the roster is not there yet because of how good C.J. Stroud played. And that gets to be a little bit unfair for young quarterbacks. Purdy, same way. There are only five quarterbacks who've averaged 8 yards per attempt in their career over the past 50 years. Okay. Three of them are Shanahan era Niners quarterbacks. And this is going to blow your mind. It's Brock Purdy, Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Mullins. The other two are Watson and Steve Young.
Wow.
And the problem is that I think Niners fans can say, all right, well, Brock Purdy's doing this, this, this. And then other fans can say, well, he's not as good as the numbers look. And then it just becomes much more heated than it should. Brock Purdy's a good quarterback who can run the system. I do not believe he is the most valuable player in football. I do not believe he's Tom Brady or, and I saw a lot of comps to this, you know, just like, oh, well, you know, early Tom Brady didn't have this. It's not the same. The quarterback performance beforehand has informed what we feel about the San Francisco quarterback now. That's the conversation. Where Brock Purdy stands in the hierarchy, and it's the problem with our media, Glenn. I'm at fault, too.
Blame the media. Okay. All right.
No, we have to rank the quarterbacks. That's what we do. Everybody has to rank the quarterbacks. I'll rank the quarterbacks. You'll rank the quarterbacks. We'll go on ESPN and rank the quarterbacks. And when that happens, it's really hard to say, well, I'm going to rank Brock Purdy at 7 as long as he has Kyle Shanahan. If you get rid of Kyle Shanahan, I'm ranking him at 14. That's not how we do things. You know why? Because we rank the quarterbacks, you put them on a little graphic, and we tweet them out. That's the binary situation in media right now, and that's why this conversation gets so toxic.
Okay, but here's the thing. Shanahan, we know, can tend to fall in love with certain things, whether or not it's working or not. In this particular case, last week, it didn't look like Purdy had it all going through the air between the glove, the non-glove. They kept sticking with it, and at some point, we've seen Shanahan screw this up before. The in-game strategy is as important as just what we believe Purdy's ceiling is, no?
Yes. Kyle Shanahan's the most important person on the Niners, by far. Like that you mentioned Andy Reid earlier on the Chiefs. It's Kyle Shanahan and the in-game strategy. What the weather is, that's most, I mean, like Brock Purdy seems to not be able to throw in the rain. What happens on Sunday afternoon on the West Coast? Is it going to drizzle a little bit? And what kind of rain? What's the threshold for him to not play as well? The in-game strategy is informed by so many different things. How good is this pass rush for the Lions? I don't know. Aiden Hutchinson is elite. The depth behind him over the course of the season has been questionable, frankly. Are the linebackers going to be good enough to do? I mean, like part of the problem with the Eagles a couple of weeks ago when they got exposed by the Niners was that their linebackers and the safeties just couldn't handle the mixture of speed and strength that the Niners had. This is a matchup game. Kyle Shanahan is a matchup coach. I think you're going to see him thrive.
One of the biggest questions is Deebo Samuel, whether or not he'll be able to play after leaving the game against the Packers. He had that shoulder injury. If the Niners don't have him, how do they adapt?
Well, the good news is they've got a lot of guys who are phenomenal at catching the ball and running with the ball. ESPN Analytics does basically a rating of every player based on their stats, and Deebo Samuel is by far the best yards after catch guy in football. By a wide margin. 10 percentage points, basically, is the difference between Deebo Samuel and anybody else in football. But George Kittle is a total stud. Christian McCaffrey, we haven't even mentioned him. I'll give you a great example. Christian McCaffrey has more touchdowns against two high shells, which is the dominant coverage in the NFL, than any running back in football. And I think you can go deep, stretch the field, let McCaffrey work. Deebo Samuel is a huge loss, okay? Let's say that. But to have a Brandon Ayuk on the field, to have a Kittle, to have a McCaffrey, to have, you know, Trent Williams, guys like that, there will be no shortage of options. This is not like the Chiefs if they lost Travis Kelce and there'd be no option except Rashee Rice and MVS. That's not what this is about. They just have to do something a little bit different. I would not force the ball to any of the backups like Kyle Shanahan has done in the past. They'll be able to cook. I'm not worried about that. I just know Deebo Samuel is as singular a force as there is in the yards after catch department in the sport.
On the Detroit side, they have to be looking to exploit that Niners run defense that hasn't been that good, especially in recent weeks. Does the Lions rushing attack have an edge against that defensive front of the 49ers? And do you think that 49ers front might be living a little bit off reputation at this point?
I think that, first of all, the Niners defensive front is really good. It's really good, and they have talent, and they have genuine pass rush depth, which is the hardest thing to have. If there's anything that I think is going to be important, it's in the matchup between the interior pressure on the Niners and the interior offensive line on the Lions. And now extend that to the middle of the field. Jared Goff is as good as there is at the middle of the field passes. He is elite at 0 to 10 yard throws in the middle of the field, 10 to 20 yard throws. He's really bad at deep middle, but nobody's perfect. And so I think it's a combination of running the ball to the outside, keeping those guys honest with that. This is a team, they like to get these offensive linemen out into space and maul people. They have an identity across the lines. They're going to want to run the ball and use the middle of the field. So this comes down to not only the defensive front, but Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, their ability to patrol the middle of the field and make life miserable for Jared Goff. That is the matchup to me. The Lions versus the middle of the field, whether that's through the defensive line or through the linebackers.
Goff has faced the 49ers 9 times before in his career. He's gone 3 of 6, but all those games came as a Ram. You mentioned him earlier being this important. How good of a game do you think he's going to have? He's a different player under Dan Campbell, undoubtedly.
It has to be mistake-free. Has to be mistake-free. Because the Niners are going to put up points. And Jared Goff's ability, I believe he has the quickest release out of anybody in these playoffs. I believe that he understands what to do with the football. Amon-Ra St. Brown has been absolutely incredible. Sam Laporta has made catches. We've seen that. Jahmyr Gibbs has been phenomenal. They've built this through the spine of their offense and defense in a really smart way. Jared Goff knows how to not make mistakes. He did with McVay. He's done it with Ben Johnson now, the OC in Detroit. I'm expecting a clean game because that's what they have to play in order to stay in this. If he makes mistakes, frankly, it's over. Like, he has to take care of the football, execute the offense the way he knows how. They were so good over the weekend at using the outside guys as decoys to clear out the middle of the field and then let them cook. That's not going to happen here with Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. Those guys know how to, we saw it with Greenlaw, those guys know how to take away the middle of the field. And so it comes down to smart, quick decisions for Goff, and I just can't wait for that matchup.
We've got the offensive whiz kid, so to speak, in Kyle Shanahan against the emotional motivator of Dan Campbell. Who do you think has the edge here in terms of the psychological battle, if you will, in coaching?
Dan Campbell has a psychological edge because he has nothing to lose, because he's in year 3 of one of the best rebuilds I've ever seen in my entire life. Kyle Shanahan has a lot of pressure on him. Kyle Shanahan's a better coach than Dan Campbell, but Dan Campbell has a better story and he has more momentum in relation to where that franchise was a couple of years ago. I've spent a lot of time with both of those guys, especially Dan Campbell, and I understand the process it took to get here. And so The psychological edge goes to the guy who's going into San Francisco after two of the loudest home playoff games I've ever seen in Detroit, with the entire city rallying behind him, just starved for any success. Dan Campbell has nothing to lose on Sunday. And I think that's a very, I know this is the cliche of all cliches, but it's a very dangerous place to be psychologically. They're going to go for it. They're going to go for it on fourth down. They're going to go for it in situations where most coaches would be conservative. And that, to me, might end up being the edge. And if this game is close, tilt it a little bit towards the Lions.
Man, was it cool to see 50,000 people screaming "Lose Yourself" inside of Ford Field in Detroit.
That was awesome. One of the coolest things I've seen in football. This Lions thing is so special.
So let's finish these statements. Detroit wins if X, and San Francisco wins if Y.
Detroit wins if Jared Goff takes care of the football and they execute on those really aggressive things I talked about. Dan Campbell told me a few years ago, the reason he goes for it on fourth down is because when he was with Sean Payton, he would see how scared the defense would get when he would be aggressive on fourth down, when Sean Payton would. And I think that's universal. It doesn't matter if you're Dre Greenlaw or Fred Warner, it doesn't matter if you're the worst linebacker in the world. You don't want to go against a team who wants to take a shot on fourth and three. That's scary. So if you execute those plays, you win the NFC Championship game. Niners? They just play their game of football. Brock Purdy executes, gets the ball in the playmaker's hands, and then, most importantly, Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw and that secondary take away what Goff wants to do over the short middle of the field. Because if you take away that, they've been good outside the numbers, but not the same volume. There's one place where you can make easy throws, and if Warner and Greenlaw take that away, it is over.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Clinton.
I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow, kiddos.